This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Theater Geeks is a production of the Dufour Creative Network.
I think we're going to start. Are you rolling?
Please.
Okay.
Are we rolling?
We're rolling.
Rolling.
That's a TV term, rolling.
I have to put up with this.
Hey, first of all, just thank you very much for all of you coming out here today. And we really appreciate it, so give yourselves a hand.
Yes. We wish there were more of you.
And the prize for the furthest distance traveled goes to, it's a tie between the Waldmans and Paige and Jamie, my daughter Paige Dufour and Jamie Reckelhoff, coming all the way from Indianapolis. So,
yeah.
They all came from Indianapolis.
And second prize probably goes to our guest, Carly Barr, who is from this area but came in from Chicago.
Oh, very
And
nice.
Boy, are her arms tired, right? Yeah, there you go. Okay, never mind.
Leave the stand-up to other people, Dave.
What's that?
I said leave the stand-up to others.
Oh, okay. I think I will. All right. Cool. Okay. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Hey there, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. We're here live at the Bristol Opera House, and it is time for our, it's not really annual, it's sort of like whenever we decide to do it, episodes of I Know, our game show, and we like to do this in front of a live audience, and it's always great to be here in Bristol, and we'll be here for the next hour and a half in case you want to run down here. With me, of course, is Marcia and John.
Hi.
Rick Ellis is our quiz master for today for our games.
Yay.
And
keeper of the bill.
And Kevin Agelski is here for to be our MC on the games. Welcome, Kevin. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. And we're also being videotaped by Mr. Joe Pulaski over here. And
Yay.
So really a bandwagon video. Want to get that plug in. And so that's important as well. One of the reasons that we're doing this is because after several years of doing this podcast, we have finally hit 100 episodes. And that was kind of an interesting... Thank you very much. And
we're not being attacked.
There we go. We're not being attacked. Okay. Anyway, this is actually going to be, I believe, episode 106 because we hit episode 100 a couple of weeks ago, and we finally decided to make this a weekly podcast instead of biweekly. It took us 4 years to get to 100 episodes because we were only doing 26 episodes a year. See how that works, the math? Anyway, we'll probably hit 200 a lot more quickly if we keep doing it weekly. I don't think we realized that we would actually keep going this long.
You could have fooled me.
Yeah.
So I remain silent.
Not hard.
Oh, yeah, that's great. We're going right into the games.
I think we should.
We should start the games. Mr. Kevin Agelski, we are going to play I Know, and we will have a special guest after that who I'll introduce in just a moment. But Kevin, take it away.
Yes, the first game we're going to play is Bluff the Listener. Each one of our folks up here are distinguished geeks. Each has a story, and they're going to tell you the story, and the contestant who gets picked will choose the story that they believe is true.
All right.
So if someone wants to...
Marcia, would you draw a ticket out of the box, out of the magic box?
Oh.
There? The see-through box.
I didn't know we had one of those.
Jeez. Oh,
well, you know, I...
There we go.
Okay. Oh, I have to read the number? Oh, my Lord. That's where you show your age. 181-9593.
Who's got the ticket?
Okay.
All right.
Oh, and she's the person who told me just about 15 minutes ago, I don't want to play. Well, Jill, you come on. You're going
to come on up here, Jill, to the mic. Come on up to the microphone here.
Come on up.
Right over there. Right over there. We need you to come on up. And we can... Should we just go ahead and get started, John?
Well, I was going to say, while she's coming up, this is Jill Stoll. She used to
Jill
play
Stoll.
Flute a lot in our orchestras, now she's half-time in our local area and half-time in northern Michigan, enjoying the beauty up there. So.
Okay, well, let's have a round of applause for Jill. There we go. Okay. So, who goes first?
Dave, why don't you go first?
I will go first. All right. This is my story. You have to decide whether it's true or not. And I'm not telling because I don't know.
Just read.
Private Lives or TMI? In 1975, British actress Dame Maggie Smith played Amanda in the umpteenth revival of Noel Coward's 1930 drawing room classic, Private Lives. The production played to packed houses for 10 months in London and subsequently to sell-out crowds in L.A. before moving to Broadway. In a cowardly twist, Maggie and Robert Stevens, her leading man, as well as her husband of 8 years, were battling offstage as well as on. Ultimately, he was dropped from the show and dropped as her husband before the show moved to Broadway. You'd be amazed, Ms. Smith says. You can go on and on finding new things, and suddenly everything becomes clear, and you say, oh, yes, that's the way to do it. On stage, you get so many chances to do it right.
Thank you, Dave. That's Dave's story about Private Lives. Marcia?
Oh, we're reading them all first, okay. This is called Irene Ryan Died on Stage. Before she was Granny Clampett from the Beverly Hillbillies, actress Irene Ryan was a longtime veteran of the stage. Her most memorable role was the Tony-nominated Grandma Bertha in the original cast of the Bob Fosse-directed Broadway musical Pippin. It became a nightly showstopper when she sang the number No Time at All, which mentions a man who calls me Granny. Ryan was devoted to her work on the stage and wouldn't be stopped by her age. In March 1973, Ryan suffered a stroke on stage during a performance of Pippin. She was assisted backstage by another actor and subsequently passed away in the wings. The New York Times reported the following morning, Irene Ryan dies on stage.
Okay,
True or false.
That's Marcia's story about Irene Ryan dying on stage.
Right.
And our last one is John Shaw.
This is called My Homage to a Lot of Spam. In November 2000, Monty Python member John Cleese penned a satirical piece announcing the revocation of America's independence. The following letter was printed in the New York Times. London 8th, November 2000, to the citizens of the United States of America. Following your failure to elect either a half-decent candidate or man-monkey as president of the USA to govern yourselves and, by extension, the free world, we hereby give notice of the revocation of your independence. Her Sovereign Majesty, Queen Elizabeth II, will resume a monarch's duties over all states, commonwealths, and other territories. To aid in the transition to a British crown dependency, please comply with the following acts. 1. Look up revoke in a dictionary. 2. Learn at least the first 4 lines of God Save the Queen. 3. Start referring to soccer as football. 4. Declare war on Quebec. Tax collectors from Her Majesty's government will be with you shortly to ensure the acquisition of all revenues due, backdated to 1776. Thank you for your cooperation and have a nice day. John Cleese, Basil Fawlty Towers, Torquay, Devon, England.
Okay, and that's John's story about My Homage to a Lot of Spam.
While Jill is thinking, we need to tell her what her prize will be if she wins.
Oh.
Jill, your prize will be, hang on, let's see, we've got a special one here. You're going to get Peter Baker's voice on your home answering machine.
On your home answering machine.
Oh.
And here's Peter Baker to talk about that.
Hello, I'm Pete Baker. Welcome to Theatre Geeks Live at the Bristol Opera House. Today, someone in our audience will have a chance to play everyone's favorite test of theatrical knowledge. I know. And the winner will receive me. Well, actually, the winner receives a recording of me for his or her telephone answering machine. I'll be saying something no doubt exciting, such as, Judy's not at home. She's probably walking the dog, so please leave a message at the tone. Or, Fred had too many gin and tonics last night and can't get to the phone just now. Or, Susan's not available at the moment. If you are her ex-boyfriend, don't bother leaving a message because now I'm the fellow making her breakfast in bed. Anything you want, actually. And, of course, I'll do it in my best BBC Points West style. Have a good time playing, and best of luck to all theatre geeks.
Okay, Jill, there you go. Now, that's what's on the line, and now your choice of stories which you believe is true, or Dave's story about Private Lives, We have Marcia's story about Irene dying on stage, Irene Ryan dying on stage, or John's, an homage to a lot of spam. Which one do you believe is true?
Well, I'm quite sure that John Cleese would be capable of such a thing, but I don't believe he did that.
Okay. Well, then that one's out.
I never really heard of Irene Ryan, and I'm not sure about that.
Okay, well, then that one's out.
So I'm going to go with the Maggie Smith story.
That's it. Is that the true one?
That is the true one.
That is the true one.
I said that is the true one. All right. All you need to do is stick around. I'll give you information to send me what you'd like Peter Baker to say on your answering machine.
Keep it clean.
And keep it clean. Actually, I don't think Peter cares one way or the other, so it can be whatever you like.
Something about a flute.
There we go.
I think what's interesting is I always thought that Irene Ryan died backstage, but she had her stroke backstage, too.
She had her stroke on stage. She then went home to California and died 6 weeks later.
Oh, okay.
The mystery is
I also
solved.
Thought this one was
there
true, too, so there you go.
That's been going around on the Internet since 2000.
Okay. Well, there you go. So you
can't
trust
the Internet for truthful information, can you? Okay.
Really?
We have a special guest with us today, and it is in the person of Mr. Bob Walls. And Bob, welcome to Theater Geeks.
Hey, Bob. Thank you, Dave. Hi.
Bob is has been with us on our stage a number of times, but a number of years ago ended up kind of going on to a different sort of stage, and you're now a puppeteer for Stevens Puppets, which is an internationally known, really, puppet troupe, isn't it?
Yes. We've been doing this for a long, long time in many, many places.
And it's marionettes, correct?
Yes.
And so how do you compare the experience of doing this sort of theater as opposed to, you know, live people theater? I don't know if that's really the right way to compare it. You tell me.
He's been stymied.
I really did. God, I hate that.
Really good.
The game is not called Stump the Guest. That's the guest, right.
From live people theater to Deadwood figure theater, I suppose.
Yeah.
We actually have our own stage that Mr. Martin Stevens designed and constructed and patented, I believe, many, many years ago.
Uh-huh.
And it's about really no larger than the size of this table that we have all the equipment on. The wings go a little farther. But imagine the stage that we have here shrunk down to about 12 feet wide as mm-hmm. a whole. I stand on the back of the stage, roughly where Marcia would be sitting right now if we were to levitate her, and we don't have Chris Angel available, therefore that's out.
Too bad.
Yes. We know about you and Chris. It's okay.
Yeah, really.
It's all right, Marcia. And we call it Theater in the Little. So imagine a proscenium shrunk down to, again, about the size of about 6, 7, 8 feet wide. And the actors are this size. They're about a foot and a half to 2 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Some a little larger. Many, it's quite small. And I will stand above them and direct them. So I'm my own director with my own actors. I have my own sound system. I have lights and the whole thing. So I'm my own production company in a box.
Great. And you personally operate, how many marionettes can you operate at once? Two or more? Or is it possible to do more than that?
Sometimes?
47.
So
wait a minute.
David.
I can't tell you how.
Oh, okay.
Many appendages involved.
I see. Oh, okay.
Yes. Oh, no, I really don't. Oh, that's scary.
No, John. Mm. No, you don't.
No.
Actually, at my best dexterity, I can do three comfortably, but we also have a secret where we can actually operate up to six at once, but we can't tell you that. My boss is in the audience and will kill me.
He is. He's sitting there. If people can't see him, but he's sitting there with like his hand over his mouth, like, don't say anything. Don't say it.
Okay, I have a question.
Yes.
I assume you do a lot of these for children, right?
Yes.
How do they react to wooden puppets, marionettes on strings, when they're used to seeing so many animated cartoons?
Before therapy?
Yeah, before therapy. Yeah.
They actually react amazingly well. We do schools, of course, during the year, 9 months, and, of course, many libraries and festivals in the summertime. And invariably, every place I go to will be a teacher or a librarian who says the kids will be sitting there and just staring. because it's something they've never seen. The cartoons and the internet and even action figures are something they see on a regular basis. This is something they do not see on a regular basis, and therefore they're enthralled by it, and it's the simple innocence of the child that allows it to come out in their faces. And again, school after school after school will say, we've never had the kids sit and be enthralled by something like this.
That's
and
great.
Like, then bring me back.
Yes. I have 17 more shows to do.
That's right.
Now, Martin Stevens, and we're in the area where Martin Stevens lived and worked from the time he started Stevens Puppets in about, what, 1933?
The official founding date is 1933, although he was doing puppets many years before that.
And many of us remember him and his wife Margie, who were, you know, both worked with him for all those years.
Sure.
And I just, you know, tell a little bit about the heritage of him, but you can also read about it on StevensPuppets.com, correct?
Yes, we have a few blurbs on our brand new updated website.
There you go. I was going to put a plug in for that. I took a look
Kent
at it yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Yes, thank you, Kent, for doing a great update of our website. But yes, in a nutshell, Martin Stevens was also one of the founders of the Puppeteers Guild of America back in 34.
Bingo.
Was in there somewhere, right? Yeah.
I know. In 1934, and so this will be, what, we're coming up on the 80th anniversary of that itself. And so I come to the long and short of it. When I got into this business, it was just another way of doing theater for me. I studied theater in college. Of course, I've done theater all over the area. But I'd never really been exposed to puppetry, especially in this. We saw the hand puppets and all that, and that's wonderful and magnificent. But puppets like this, we hadn't been exposed to. So when Martin Stevens started his thing, to put it in perspective, if I was to go into a puppetry circle and say Martin Stevens, what I'm really saying is Babe Ruth.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's the impact that he had on American puppetry itself. And so to be able to realize that I'm literally stepping into his shoes on his stage is really quite amazingly humbling.
Yeah. Right.
I'm sure you know that Martin appeared on the Bristol Opera House stage in several shows and directed several shows.
Yes, in fact, I know
one of which I was very fortunate to be in. He was a wonderful director.
I wish I'd had the opportunity to meet Steve. Of course, he passed away in 83, well before I was even remotely involved in something like this. I know he has a couple of paintings here in the Opera House itself, an amazing artist, and one of his paintings of him, the toy maker, is on our website as well.
Yeah, we actually have a full-size head that he created up in it's up in the office. It's cracked in half now, but loved it. He was actually one of my first theatrical experiences. So as a child, having Martin Stevens puppets come into our school in Goshen and getting that chance to see, you know, for a kid especially, I think there's that moment where you forget that they're not real people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a good thing, which is, you know, that you start to get so engrossed in the story and the action that they really kind of become real people
period. That's a lot of what the teachers are telling me about the children is that they really start to follow and forget that you're watching. I mean, we know from watching, you know, movies and stage, if you can, especially if you know the person, if you can forget you're watching that person. Many actors, I always think, you know, who should be nominated for an Academy Award or whatever. If I forget I'm watching that particular actor and really get into the story, that's a role I want to pay attention to. And so with the puppets here, because they're marionettes and they're full body, arms, legs, face, in some cases we do have moving eyes and mouths, the kids really get drawn into it. And the adults, too. I've had no counting of adults who have said that they just are just amazed by what just this little art form can do.
Okay, how many people work with you in any given show?
During the show itself?
Yeah, how many are manipulating the marionettes?
None.
Just you?
Just me. Me, myself, and I. We work in tandem.
Okay. Wow. How many shows do you have available to go out? How many shows?
We have 6 marionette shows that can go out at any given time. We also have an extra show called The Wonderful World of Puppets, which entails many different types of marionettes and hand puppets and Punch and Judy shows and that type of thing. So it's more of the history of puppets that we can pull out at any time.
Okay. Do you make a lot of new puppets, or are some of these originals from Martin?
They are all from Martin except for one show, Beauty and the Beast, which is our newest show, which was made by my boss's wife, Zan Rayner. Dan is in the audience.
Dan's in the audience.
Dan,
there
he is. Hi.
Okay.
I did say beautiful wife, yes? Yes, good. Paycheck hasn't been cut yet. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Anyhow, she made the last show, Beauty and the Beast, but as I understand, they were based on Steve's original concept drawings and idea, and had he survived long enough, he would have made them to look like this. Suzanne was very true to his idea. We've also redone three of our full sets in terms of the backdrops. They get old and need repainting,
right,
like slats and flats do and what have you. But same thing, retraced and repainted, and they just look absolutely marvelous. Zan is just an amazing artist, has her own studio just down the road. As we're hoping to update everything as soon as we get. That's for making new puppets. Time-wise, boy, it's tough. Beauty and the Beast was made 12 years ago. And so it's just, we have lots of plans in the works for shows we'd love to do. When does the time come? We don't
know.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, do you still use the original voice tracks and things as well?
Or? Most of them, yes. There was one we had to do recently just because the track itself was starting to deteriorate. But we've updated all the voices, Rumpelstiltskin being the latest one, including Dan in very wonderful voice recreations of such. I personally have not done one yet, but I'm looking to do soon.
Well, that's great.
What's your most popular one?
Our most popular one, easily, The Wizard of Oz.
Okay. Well, is that what this one is from?
Let me rephrase. Yes, we are doing The Wizard of Oz.
Yes, we have The Wicked Witch here.
We have the Tin Man down there. We do. Let me restate that quickly. We also have one that's extremely popular, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, but it's not a show that we tour year-round. As the story goes, Steve tried to tour the Legend of Sleepy Hollow, like say in February, and it was a total dog. It doesn't quite work around Valentine's Day for some reason. Popping to the head, and who knew?
But it's such a nice love story.
It is. It really is. Especially heartless. It's good. It's good. And so, but The Wizard of Oz, I think, because of the overall familiarity of it, recently in the past 30 years, there's been an Oz festival in Chesterton, which unfortunately now has been.
I was going to say it's not there.
It's been disbanded. For now, we're hoping to get that back up. However, something like that, there's no Rumpelstiltskin Festival, there's no Sleeping Beauty Festival, at least of a national level that we're aware of. And though the stories are revered, Wizard of Oz, especially to the kids who have seen the movies and the parents who have seen the movies, they want to see the ruby slippers, they want to see Toto, they want to see the Tin Man and all that. And we provide.
That's cool.
Yeah. You were talking about the Headless Horseman, the head comes off.
Yes.
Which is in terms of marionettes. Is classed as something of a special effect, and that was one that Steve designed, as well as the Rumpelstiltskin flying apart kind of thing at one point in the show as well. It's not something normally you think of when you think of marionettes.
In fact, the Rumpelstiltskin puppet was the first of its kind to actually essentially explode into seven pieces.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
And so, as the story goes, Rumpelstiltskin gets so mad that the character even say that he gets so mad he'll fly to pieces. Well, we made it happen.
Yeah.
And Steve did such an amazing job. And it was the first of its kind. It was something that no one had conceived of at the time, and it's just something that we were able to do. As for the Headless Horseman, same idea. It's just you don't dismantle a puppet in the middle of a show.
No.
But he did.
Yeah. That's cool.
He's
That's
amazing.
Very cool. Yeah, he was a family friend of ours, and I'm glad the Sleepy Hollow show is still around, because I think that probably was the one that really spooked me as a kid, as a matter of fact. And he used to show previews of his newest shows at his home about once a year in the summertime. And so we got to see a lot of his plays at his house, which was something of a special effect in and of itself.
Oh. Unfortunately, I did not have the privilege of going to the Mousetrap workshop itself on Stone Lake there in Middlebury.
Oh.
But anybody who's a Middlebury native knows Steve, knew Steve. As you said, went to the shows and all that, but it was a museum unto itself and the workshop itself, and it's such a tragedy that it's gone now, and that it's we lost so many stories in the fire that it's just it's what it is, but we have what we have. And
I will tell you a Margie story though, because Margie was his wife his third wife, but when he died, she died before him, but she had one time I went over to their home, and up in the ceiling, at the very center top of that ceiling in that great room, she had put a basket, like a bird cage, and put a puppet in it. And I remember thinking, what is that puppet doing up there? And Margie, almost with a straight face, said, "That was a very bad puppet." I thought, okay. I think maybe I'll
show me the door.
As long as there wasn't a kid-sized basket corner, you're okay.
So for more information about Stephen's puppets and booking and all that kind of good stuff, as well as a great look at some of the puppets that Steve himself designed, go to
www.stephenspuppets.com.
And I'd like to thank you, Bob, for being here and showing us and telling us all about it. We'll have some photos.
We will have
video of this show up online shortly. This episode is probably going to go up on audio in the next day or so, actually. So,
Marcia, to answer your question quickly, we are working on, with the new website design, we are working on soon putting up some video clips. We're not exactly sure how that's going to handle yet, but it is in talks. We are working on it. And
good.
So we will be able. We don't obviously want to put the whole show up hire me.
I just think it's fascinating to watch you do that.
Thank you.
That's right. Yeah, they're great. Thanks a lot. Let's have a big hand for Bob Wallace. Thanks for coming with us. All right, Kevin, what time is it?
It is time for Limerick.
Limericks. Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
And so we need to. Do we need to draw a name?
Yes, we do need to draw a name.
Okay, John, you can draw.
Okay, I'm drawing. This ticket is. Okay. 1819591.
9591.
There you go. Page.
One of our long distance travelers here.
Come on up to the microphone here.
I'm going to give you three limericks.
Okay.
And you're going to finish them. You're going to give us the last. You're going to give us the last word in each limerick.
Okay.
And if you identify two out of three, you win a special prize.
Okay.
That has come out of the.
Out of our prop room downstairs.
Out of our prop room, yes. Some wonderful stuff from the basement. You'd be amazed at how much great stuff
is in our
basement.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is where
there goes the lion.
The lion is right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
We missed
aren't they great?
Yeah,
here's your first one.
Love them.
There are winters that melt into springs, and packages tied up with strings, and crisp apple strudel, and schnitzel with noodle, a few of my favorite
things.
Yes, that is correct.
Oh, wow.
We're on a roll here.
Oh, gosh. I wish I had had that one.
Yeah.
Okay, your second one. There is nothing that you can name, nothing else that was built the same. No moonlight at sea, no fruit from the tree that is anything like a...
Oh, gosh, say it again. What was it? Say it again. I lost track of where you're...
There is nothing that you can name... Nothing else that was built the same. No moonlight at sea, no fruit from a tree. That is anything like a...
Dame. That's
a...
But I heard the answer from the audience.
We'll give you half on that. If you can get the other half, that'll be two out of three. Here's your third one. I hate to disappoint a beau. I'm a fool when the lights are low. Not prissy and quaint. Ain't the type that can faint. Just a girl who can't say...
No.
Yeah. Well,
okay. And then she wins.
And she wins, and here's the first prize.
A big blue ribbon.
A big blue ribbon. Not a Pabst blue ribbon, just a big blue ribbon.
Just a big blue ribbon.
She really took a lot of time.
That's right.
There you go.
All right. Well, there you go.
That's part of the archive.
I was going to say, it's part of our archive in the basement.
Okay, we are going to wrap up this here episode. Thanks very much to Kevin Agelski for being our MC, Rick Ellis, our quiz master. And remember to stop by the website to listen to this podcast. You can also pick up all sorts of interesting geek gear like these here mugs. TheaterGeeks.com/store. The shirts, mugs, hats, caps, and John's favorite.
Teddy bears. Okay. It rhymes with teddy bear.
There we go. And that's all from us. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.